Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. The 152nd Open Championship is upon us. Preparations and practice have been completed. Rex, you have been in Scotland for more than a week now. I am now 3 days in to my journey. What have been your impressions of Royal Troon and the year's final major to this point?
You were a little flat on Monday on the podcast. How are you feeling? You just flown in. You were a trooper. You did the pod. You did TV right off the plane. Everything good? You're better now. You look fresh.
Yes, it was a very gritty performance, I would say, on Live From. And then in our recap podcast that we recorded here from the media center on Monday. Again, you and I are in the same media center, but we are in different stalls. We're not all that close to each other, probably 50 yards away at this point. We do not have the technology. We actually do not think it will look good if we're in the same spot at the same time. Just putting that out there because I know we're going to get comments on that. But yes, I do feel much better. Thank you for asking. Shout out to the wife who provided me with extra strength melatonin, which is
nice.
30 minutes and I'm out like a light. Back to the question in the matter at hand, please.
Matter at hand is you look forward to this one all year long, last major championship. It's Lynx Golf. It's so different. I think there is an anticipation that you don't really get outside of Augusta, only because we have that huge window between at the end of this week. Now all we're going to do is turn our attention to Augusta. But this is so different. You and I covered a lot of topics the last couple of days on Live From. Probably the one that stood out, though, is you are a historically early riser. You've been stomping around the flat every morning, waking everyone up, me, bunkmate. And you're going to be up early tomorrow morning, and you and I sort of differed on opinion on, like, who do you want to watch first thing tomorrow morning? And you went with Rory, and I think there's something to touch on there, and I certainly do. But for me, there is no more interesting person. There is no more interesting storyline in the game than Bryson DeChambeau. You simply look at what he's done the last few weeks. You look at the victory lap, literal victory lap he took at Pinehurst after winning the U.S. Open, and all the attention that's on him this week, which is understandable. You would 100% expect it. But, and I think I made this comment to you last night when we were eating dinner, he spoke with everyone with a microphone on property yesterday. He would not stop talking. If you walked up and asked him, hey, you got 2 minutes and you had a microphone in your hand, he was going to do it. I was one of those people, very appreciative, but you wonder he's embracing this sort of new Bryson. He's embracing this new personality. But there has to be a time when you turn your attention to the competition. That's going to be tomorrow morning when he tees off early. I am riveted to everything Bryson's going to do starting tomorrow morning and then whatever happens the next 3 days.
Who cares if he's signing autographs on Tuesday? Who cares if he's giving out interviews on Monday afternoon? It's all about his preparation, which I always think is a little bit unique. Keep in mind, this is a player who really doesn't play practice rounds when he's at home. Like when he's at home in Dallas, he will grind on the range. He'll try to make sure his equipment is dialed, but it's not like he's playing 36 holes a day with his buddies and spin around Dallas National or Merido or wherever else that he wants to get his competitive golf. And he's always been different that way, and that he's sort of training his body, training his mind, training his motion as opposed to playing competitive golf. He treats practice rounds ahead of major championships in a very similar manner, spending an hour, sometimes two. At least a couple years ago when he was trying to rediscover his swing, he's spending 3 or 4 hours on the range. It has not been quite that intense. And then he goes out and plays nine holes. I'm with you that I think Bryson is a fascinating character this week of the Open Championship. This has obviously been his best major season to date, with top eight finishes in the previous three major championships, obviously coming off the win at Pinehurst. Best major season, but now he's hitting into what has historically been his worst major as a professional. In just six open starts, he has a single top 30 finish. I think there's a number of reasons that you could point to explain why his record is so poor. And I think it's probably similar, Rex, to what you saw with Phil Mickelson early in his career, sort of learning how to play this style of golf earlier in Bryson's career. He wasn't a strong enough putter, wasn't a good enough wedger of the golf ball. In recent years, with the reinvention, getting bigger, getting stronger, hitting it further, he's sort of dialing down what is a tour-leading apex height off the tee. The crosswinds at Royal Troon, we'll get into the golf course here in a little bit, you're going to be experiencing crosswinds on basically every single hole, all 18 holes. How he navigates that with what is going to be the highest ball flight of any player in the field. Does he adopt that strategy to bash driver? Does he dial back with irons off the tee? I'm very curious to see how he plays this golf course in particular.
Sorry, muted. I think the part, and we kind of touched on this on our live from Hit, and the idea he's so fascinating is because he plays a particular brand of golf, which we saw at the U.S. Open last month, which we saw at the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, and we've seen over the course of his career, that is much better suited for those types of golf courses, courses in the United States. He's going to have to adjust his game here in the United Kingdom, especially with the forecast, as you pointed out, that we have. It's not varying shades of awful, which we can get from time to time, but there is enough to keep your interest. Winds are expected to get up to 20, 25 miles an hour on Friday. I think there's rain every day somehow in the forecast. The way this golf course sets up, and we've talked a little bit about it, it's kind of a short out and long back, and by that, I think it's a little over 300 yards shorter on the outward loop than it is on the inward loop, and most of the holes seem to play more historically into the wind on the second nine. All of those things are going to challenge him in a way that he hasn't had an answer to. And as we know, he's very much a perfectionist. He wants to take all of the variables out of the equation. Lynx golf makes that virtually impossible. And so I think, I'm not sure if he is to the point in his career. You certainly see a level of confidence that we haven't seen from him before. There's a mastery that we haven't seen before. But I don't know that if he's ready to take that next step to master, I don't think anybody masters, but to understand Lynx golf enough, to understand that I'm going to get bad bounces, I got to roll with it, I've got to keep the ball low, sometimes par is a good score, all of the things. I'm not sure if he's there yet, but I keep coming back to the same line that I used on live from. Yeah. Phil Mickelson's record in the Open Championship was awful, just terrible, until it wasn't, until he found a way at Muirfield to be brilliant. He found a way at Muirfield to finally get that Clara jug. I don't know if this is going to be Bryson's week or not. That's what makes him so fascinating to me.
Phil Mickelson actually discovered the trick 2004, two times ago that the Open was at Royal Troon, is when he first started working with Dave Pelce, and they learned to hit the shot that goes underneath the wind with low spin. That's the shot that predominantly turned around his Open record. Bryson, to my knowledge, has not yet had access to Dave Pelce or understands exactly how to hit that shot. That's why I'm so interested to see, because Bryson said the exact same thing, if you were paying attention, ahead of the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, where he said he's going to play a smarter strategy. He didn't need to hit driver. He needed to play more strategic. He has proven in his career that he could play that sort of strategic golf, whether it's at Valderrama, Harbortown, any other golf course that's sort of more position oriented. What happens at Pinehurst? He literally leads the field in driving distance, hit just two fairways in the final round, and yet he still prevailed and won the golf tournament. I do not think Royal Troon in particular is, I don't think driving distance is going to be important at all. I think it's going to be most important driving accuracy and greens and regulation. Can you avoid not just the pot bunkers, which by all accounts are some of the most penal on the entire Open Rota, but also the rough and the fescue that is thick, it is juicy, and it is healthy after what has been a very wet Scottish summer. And so will Bryson actually follow his own strategy, I think, is something to pay attention to over these first couple of rounds.
And you touched on the part that we sort of talked about in a live from, and for all of those who think that Ryan and I have some sort of beef, just know that no, Ryan and I don't have a beef, but apparently I have a beef with Ryan's dad. Didn't mean to do anything. I apologize if I said something wrong in the earlier hit. I'm going to use that to transition to Scottie Scheffler, because you and I disagree on this. I picked Scottie to win on my punch shots on NBCSports.com/golf for this one reason. If you go back to what Henrik Stenson did best back in 2016, when he made history winning the Clara Jug here, he hit 56 greens in regulation, by far the best in the field that week. The guy who's number one on the PGA Tour this year in greens in regulation, clearly, is Scottie Scheffler. After we got done with our hit this afternoon, I asked Pete Cowan. I was actually making fun of you and said that you thought Scottie couldn't win. And I was making the comparison. Pete Cowan was Henrik Stenson's swing coach when he won here back in 2016. And he actually kind of corrected me. And he goes, if you look at what he did well, he played very, very defensively off the tee, to your point. Go back to Henrik Stenson at that point in time in his career. For a world-class player, for a top player, he hit more three woods than anyone else in the game. He always felt like it was more important to be in the fairway than to do the bomb and gouge thing. To that point, Pete also explained that in his prime, back in 2016, he felt like he could hit a three iron better than most players could hit a six iron. So he didn't mind putting himself at a bit of a disadvantage off the tee. And he was also one of the best long iron players in the game. 56 greens in regulation. Pete estimated he probably had 40 birdie chances in that round, over the course of those four rounds. That is a recipe for success here.
Yes. I mean, there's ample reason why Scottie Scheffler can and maybe even will win this Open Championship. It's not just his iron prowess, which is world-class. The distance control that he exhibits is better than any other player in the world. You look at his driving accuracy. Most weeks, he leads the PGA Tour in distance from the edge of the fairway. In other words, he does not have the wild miss that can plague a Xander Schauffele or Rory McIlroy or any other world-class player. There's plenty of reasons why. The historical season that he's having, there's a reason why he's 9-2 this week, according to the odds makers, the lowest odds we've seen since Tiger Woods in the 2009 Open Championship. And yet, Rex, I can't help but think back to the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, because we were having the exact same discussion, how at Pinehurst, Scotty was a shoe-in to win because he can put the ball in the fairway with any club in the bag. He's the best player with 5, 6, 7 iron, which was going to be so important in hitting what were very small targets at Pinehurst. And his putting is average to above average. And that would be plenty good enough on Donald Ross's notoriously difficult greens. Like, there was plenty of reason heading into the Pinehurst as well. Let's get Scheffler's going to win that tournament. And yet he didn't. And yet he had his worst finish of the year. Why did he have his worst finish of the year? I go back to his driving accuracy. And Scotty Scheffler has mentioned multiple times how difficult it was for him to stand up on a tee and visualize the shot he wanted to have. That is because there was a fairway, and then on both sides you had unpredictable wire grass rough where you could get totally boned, or you could have a clean shot and be able to basically hit it just like you were in the fairway. He said that messed with his mind, and as a result, he was tied for 59th in driving accuracy that week, finished outside the top 40. Scotty Scheffler, I just made this point on TV, Scotty Scheffler is a player who craves predictability. You see it in the way that he does his routine. You see it in the way that he practices. He's got that molded grip that you and I have both copied and just attached to a 7-iron and tried to perfect. He looks at his grip. He looks at his fundamentals. Like, he is very rigid and regimented in that way. He practices the exact same every single week, and he knows by the time he tees it up on Thursday, he's done all the things. It's basically a checklist. He's done all the things he needs to do in order to properly prepare. Pinehurst sort of was chaotic in the sense that you didn't know what was going to happen once the ball hit the ground or when it even hit the green and where it would potentially roll off to. I think the Open Championship and Royal Troon are also elements of chaos, whether it's a bad bounce that goes into a bunker, whether it's a bad lie that you get in this thick fescue, whether it's a bad luck of the draw. He's teeing off later on Thursday, which is supposed to be heavier winds, heavier rain at the potentially in the morning. That all factors into an Open Championship. The sample size is too small to say that this is not the style of golf that Scotty Scheffler can excel in. But just once in three starts does he have a top 10 finish. You would think with his shot making, with his creativity, this is the style of golf he'd love. He just hasn't shown it quite yet.
That's you cherry picking some stats right there. And those three starts, he hasn't finished outside the top 25 either. So it's not as though he's played things golf.
He hasn't even sniffed contention.
No, but it's not as though he's missing cuts.
But it's a relatively new style of play for him. The first time that Scotty Scheffler ever played Lynx golf was at the Scottish Open in 2021. That was just 3 short years ago. I mean, he's still a relative newcomer to this style of play.
No, and there's something to that. I'll go back to the point about Pinehurst, and I think you and I maybe had disagreed a little bit on this. I understand what you're saying about his driving. I go back to the idea, and he talked about this on Friday when he thought he'd missed the cut and said he simply wasn't prepared enough. And maybe that was a byproduct of where he was in his life at that moment. Let's go back to that moment in time. He was still reeling a little bit from what happened on Friday at Valhalla. The charges had just been dropped within a week or two of him arriving at Pinehurst. There was still a lot of things going on in his life, and he didn't feel like he was ready to play that golf course, specifically from those wild areas that you pointed out at Pinehurst. And you're right. Lynx golf comes with a lot of those wild areas. There's going to be bounces that don't go his way, and he's going to be in crazy situations. My guess is he's more prepared this time around than he was at Pinehurst. And again, I'm not going to cherry pick the stats. I'm going to say in his three starts in this championship, he hasn't finished outside the top 25. So you and I are using the same stats to make two separate arguments. Now, there was an interesting conversation on Live From this morning after you and I got finished up. I don't know if you were paying attention, but there was, and I don't know who on the desk was making the point, is that they felt like Scotty should have played last week at the Scottish Open. Because if you want to give yourself the best possible chance to win this championship, there is a mindset that playing last week on let's call it a quasi-Lynx course. It's not quite a true Lynx course, but it's enough to get acclimated to the weather, get acclimated to the time, see how the golf club goes through the turf, all of the things the players talk about. I'm not quite sure I entirely buy into that, but I see where that's coming from as well.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly see that argument. It didn't help Tiger Woods over the years would be the counter to that. Just getting over here a few days in advance, getting used to the time change. Scotty played Turnberry over the weekend. He played all 18 holes at Royal Troon on Sunday. He spent ample time on the golf course. He's 3 days getting acclimated to the sort of unique fescue turf that you have while playing Lynx golf. That's not a huge concern for me. And I think for Scotty, he actually prefers having that week off. He's talked countless times about how he did not love the idea of going, you know, Memorial, a difficult golf course and a test right into the U.S. Open. Obviously, he won the Travelers Championship on the back end of that. But traditionally, historically, he has performed his best when he has a week off ahead of a major championship, sort of prioritizing his rest, prioritizing his preparation. I'm not sure that that makes all the difference in the world. Rex, although like a Bryson DeChambeau would not qualify, obviously, for PGA Tour Player of the Year. How about this for a theoretical discussion? Do you see if a Xander Schauffele wins this week of the Open, or if Bryson DeChambeau wins this week of the Open, that you would vote them as the GWA, Golf Writers Association of America, Player of the Year over Scottie Scheffler, who has won six times, including a Masters title?
I love this conversation. Normally, you wait until much, much later in the year to let me have this conversation. This is so sports radio talkish. Like, no, I'm on. You had me at. Let's do something different. Bryson would be an interesting conversation, simply because of not just obviously what he did at Pinehurst, if he were to win this week, as we just had a long conversation about it, but also what he's done on LIV Golf. It's worth pointing out, I voted for Jon Rahm last year for the GWA Player of the Year. We vote for the Player of the Year regardless of what tour they play on. Jon Rahm won the GWA Player of the Year. I was very proud of the membership that they looked beyond sort of the politics of the moment and decided that, no, he had the best year, both on and off the PGA Tour. I think if Bryson wins, depending on how Scotty finishes up the season, we still have a little bit of golf to play with the playoffs coming up. Yeah, I think it's a really, really good conversation. I'm not quite sure which way I'm going to lean in. I think you look at Bryson still has some time to play on the LIV Tour, and you'd have to factor all of those things into the mix. But man, it would be close in my mind.
Yeah, it certainly would be close. You don't need to make that determination on July 22nd. I think the things that are working in Bryson's favor, if he were to win the Open Championship, and again, I think we just outlined the reasons why that's he's probably unlikely to do so, would be the fact that in the now head-to-head meetings that Bryson and Scotty would have in 2024, Bryce would edge him out 3-1. In this new fractured landscape where they're not playing all together all that often. In fact, it's just four times a year. Giving Bryson a 3-1 edge over Scotty would certainly be significant. We could talk about the sort of watered down nature of today's PGA Tour with all the stars missing. I don't need to get into that discussion. That's a discussion for at the end of the year. But I think if Xander Schauffele wins, I wouldn't vote him Player of the Year. But I think Bryson DeChambeau, looking at the body of work in golf's most important events, the few times a year that all of the best players are together, yeah. If Bryson wins this one and Scotty again suffers, I could definitely see a scenario in which he is my Player of the Year, just as Jon Rahm was my Player of the Year for the GWA in 2023. And actually, I voted Cam Smith as my Player of the Year in 2022, given what he did at the Open Championship that year, as well as the Player's title. But certainly a good discussion to have. Rex, how about Rory? Excuse me, Sasha's fingers up. I didn't want to ignore you.
No, I'm not very good at this, so I wanted to sort of just parachute in. So by my count, he has six top 10 finishes on LIV this year, with the best being a third in Nashville. And I think they still
John
have Rahm's two more.
Top 10. Jon Rahm, top 10 in every single event? Are we discounting his year on LIV Golf?
Not at all. I'm trying to actually play both sides, as I would say it, because I'm not very good at sort of factoring those into my conversation. I'm trying to be a little bit better about it, because I think there is a conversation to be said that you do have to pay attention to these things, that no, I'm not willing to dismiss the level of competition for no other reason than they have two major champions the last 2 years. Like, clearly the competition is good enough to keep Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka edgy enough and prepared enough for the major championships. We can have other discussions about other players if it works for them, but it certainly works for those two players specifically. So I'm not even going to hide from it. Now, I think you touched on the most important thing. And every time I do a Player of the Year sort of conversation or vote, I always go back to the major championships. Major championships are what matter the most. That's what mattered to Tiger Woods back in his prime. It's why he voted for Padraig Harrington the year he didn't win it, because Padraig had won two majors and Tiger had won one. That was in 2008. And Tiger's reasoning was very simple, 2-1. Like, it's as simple as that. And head-to-head, this would give Bryson a 3-1 advantage. I guess the argument is that where are you going to slot the Players' Championship into this? Certainly, that's a conversation. Where do you slot Bay Hill, which is a signature event? Where do you slot the Travelers, which is a signature event as well? It leads to a good conversation, but I would lean in Bryson's favor just to not do the cowardly thing and say, well, we'll have to see.
I mean, it's a great conversation because Scotty's having the best season on the PGA Tour to this point in the year since, what, like 1962 in Al Palmo. And then, of course, Al Palmo that year also won an Open Championship at Royal Troon, if you're looking for some parallels there. Although I just mentioned him, so I touched briefly, I think this is a massive week for Jon Rahm, who was, again, my player of the year through the GWAA in 2023. He says consistently, I'm playing good golf on LIV Golf. I've top 10 in every single week. He actually leads the strokes gain metrics on LIV Golf this season. It has been a lost year in the majors, whether it was finishing outside the top 25 in his Masters title defense, whether it was missing the cut of the PGA, whether it was not even being able to tee it up in the U.S. Open because of the foot injury. He says he's playing better. He says he can see sort of that higher level that he's trying to access after a driver shaft switch. We will see in the year's final major if Jon Rahm shows up. Rex, how about Rory McIlroy? I can't believe we've gone this long in the podcast without talking the player who is undoubtedly the sentimental favorite this week, playing in his first major since the U.S. Open collapse. Are you ready to get your heart broken all over again and back Rory McIlroy?
You skipped past the best part about the Jon Rahm story, and that was his deep dive this week when he spoke with the media about exactly how gross and gruesome that foot injury is, with the doctor or the sticking his finger into the pus-filled hole that was his foot. You're not gonna touch on that. You're gonna keep it clean for the audience.
I still have PTSD. It sounded exactly like what happened when I had my wisdom teeth removed and it got infected. It was called a dry socket. I had dry socket, and I was having flashbacks as he was describing it, where you took basically the swab that they used to have for COVID, dip it in some ointment, and then just shove it into the hole to clean it with antibacterial. That's why I did not mention it, because I'm still recovering. I'm still seeing a therapist for that. It was absolutely brutal. Back to Rory, please.
Triggering. Yes, I see where you're coming here. I had a hard time when you were out trying to find dinner. Just as an aside, it took the household, which is you, me, and bunkmate, the better part of an hour and a half to get Chinese takeout in Troon, which is a town that you should not struggle that bad to get Chinese takeout. However, eventually we were able to run it down. But while you were doing that, I was typing my punch shots on NBCSports.com/golf, and the line was biggest disappointment of the week. And I typed in Rory's name, and then I erased it. And I typed in Rory's name, and then I erased it. And that went over and over again for about 5 minutes before Bunk finally asked me. Like,
I was wondering what took you so long to file that. It should be just boop, 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 5 minutes.
Yeah, it took way too long. I was lost in thought. I couldn't make my order for the Chinese restaurant. I held up the whole process. I apologize for that. I ended up typing in Rory's name and sticking with it. And it's hard, because you look at what he did last week at the Scottish Open, and even though he didn't win, I'm not even quite sure you could say he contended on Sunday. If we're being honest, he really was never in the mix. It was the way he struck the golf ball. He did the things off the tee, certainly, that we expect out of him when he's playing his best golf. I think he was second strokes gained off the tee. He was third strokes gained tee to green. Those are all the things, and then he said the right things. It was, well, ball striking's there. I have to figure out the speed of the greens, pace of the greens. Last night when I was doing my late hit on Live From with Todd Lewis, Rory was out on the putting green for the entire hour and a half. I was there working on the pace of the greens. So you would think that a player of this caliber who has won this championship could figure it out. All those things being said, what we saw at Pinehurst over those last four holes, that's manifest. That is real. That's not going to get any easier the further you get down the line. And the idea that somehow those two or three days in New York City right after Pinehurst, wandering around with his own thoughts, coming to terms with what happened over those final four holes, if you think that fixed it, then I'm not quite sure you understand the mental condition or the sort of the human condition, because it's always going to be there. And it's only going to manifest itself more and more. I was interested yesterday when he was speaking with the media, and he pointed out the time frame. There was about a five-year window after he won the 2014 PGA Championship, his last major. It was a five-year window when he felt like I didn't put myself in contention at all during that five-year window. And there is the positive side of it, that at least over the next 5 years, which has been the last 5 years, at least I'm putting myself into position. At least I'm giving myself the opportunity, which that's the good side of it. That's the Tiger Woods idea that, man, I just want to give myself a chance on a Sunday afternoon. But it doesn't seem to me that whatever that equation on the Sunday afternoon is getting any easier. And certainly what happened at Pinehurst doesn't give me much confidence that he's going to figure it out anytime soon.
So I think there's a couple things that are working in Rory's favor to more easily get over the collapse, which again was just 4 short weeks ago. One, I think it is very beneficial that what happened at Pinehurst was not the final major championship of the year. Can you imagine the agony that would exist if he had to sit on that collapse for 9 long months waiting before he got to the Masters in Augusta National, the number of times he'd be asked about, the number of times he'd think about it in his quiet moments. And I'm sure it has popped up over these last 4 weeks, even as he's beginning his preparations for Royal Troon, how he so clearly let get away what was his best chance to win a major since 2014. But being able to get back into the competitive swing of things last week at the Scottish Open and then having another chance this week at the Scottish Open, I think is very beneficial for Rory McIlroy. I think another thing too, Rex, is putting, which is clearly the only sort of hindrance to Rory McIlroy's game right now. He's been the leader in strokes gained tee to green last week at Scottish Open, just as he has been at least in the top three for the last couple of months. His swing has certainly been dialed since Quail Hollow in the Wells Fargo Championship win there. I think the putting at Royal Troon is going to be dramatically easier at Pinehurst, where you had to putt so defensively because of the speed of the greens, because of the slopes of the greens. Royal Troon's greens are largely unimaginative. They're largely slow and flat. And being able to putt more aggressively on birdie putts or even par putts that probably carry with it a little bit of tension, I certainly think could work to his favor. And I also think, Rex, I think Rory is more durable and resilient than perhaps he's given credit for. When he mentions what happened at the U.S. Open, that was not his most difficult loss of his career. He pointed to the 2011 Masters, in which he had a 4-shot lead and shot 8 in the final round. What happened 2 months later? He wins a congressional in a rout for his first major championship. He also mentioned the 2022 Open Championship, where he was tied for the 54-hole lead, playing with Victor Hovland. He hits every single green in regulation, but makes just 2 birdies and ends up 2 shots shy of Cam Smith. Remember him crying on his wife Erica's shoulder as he departed there. What happens a month later? He wins a 3rd FedEx Cup title. He's tougher. He's more resilient. He's more durable than perhaps we give him credit for. I think if you look at his current record, you look at his Open Championship resume with 6 top 6s in his last 8 Open starts, it'd be a complete and utter surprise if Rory McIlroy did not factor heavily into the proceedings here.
No, and look, I've been on Team Rory from the beginning. I'm not straying from that. I'm just starting to see reality for what it is. Trust me, I mean, from a storytelling perspective, yes, I want the story to be Rory, simply because of how glorious that would be coming off of Pinehurst and what happened there and how he was able to right the ship mentally, not physically, mentally, within 2 or 3 week window. And he shows up at the Open Championship, which, if we're all being honest, even though the Masters is where he's going to complete the career Grand Slam, this one is still the one that matters the most to him. Yeah, I see the storytelling of it all. I see what it would do for the championship. I'm just starting to see a formula. I'm starting to see this is how things are going to be into the foreseeable future. And I'm not of the mindset that, no, he's not going to win another major. He's too talented not to do that. I still believe he's going to win another major championship. I just don't think he found a way to make it easier this particular week than it was at the U.S. Open when you have a 2-stroke lead and 5 holes to play. I think that is going to stick with him a little bit longer than he has suggested. This is like Radio Row at the Super Bowl, just so you guys know what we're doing here and the reason why we got sort of weird backgrounds. And Matt Adams, our colleague at the Golf Channel, is right next to me, and I wanted to hear what he said about Ben Hogan. I didn't catch it all, but it's something along the lines of he would play this course very, very well.
I'm sure he would. Instead, we're going to focus on this year's contenders as we transition now. Rex, we're recording this podcast. It's 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. For folks who have office pools, for folks who play fantasy, for folks who play daily fantasy, give the people at home some names to watch. We're not going to give our pick to it quite yet, but how about some names to watch and players who could pop up and be dark horse if people so wanted to spend a couple of their hard-earned pounds?
we always wrestle on what we consider a dark horse. And I think you and I went back and forth on this last night because I went with Adam Scott based on what he did last week at the Scottish Open. He felt like he was getting the club on plane, felt like the swing was feeling very, very good. And look, if it wasn't for Bobby Mack, Adam would be coming in here with a victory. And Bobby Mack had to do some heroics coming down the stretch for that. It's the putting with Adam, much like we just had the conversation about Rory when it comes to this. But as you pointed out, of all the major championships, this is the one where green speeds, maybe those downhill 2 and 3 footers aren't nearly as difficult as maybe they certainly at Pinehurst, certainly at Augusta. So I think all of those things factor into his decision. And when you look at dark horses, I think he would probably be looked over for no other reason than just his age and how long it's been since he's won a PGA Tour event.
So you're throwing out one name. I'm going to throw out multiple names. I think Sahith Theegala is certainly a player to keep an eye on. Finished inside the top five last week at Renaissance Club. He's rapidly rising among the best players who have not yet won a major. You look at the world ranking. You look at how consistently he is factored in the signature events in the PGA Tour, major championships as well. To me, he's like a top five, top six, top seven play this week at Royal Troon. And a potential player who could keep it going. To me, Terrell Hatton is another player that I would want to potentially plunk down a few pounds on. He's probably much cheaper than he would have been a couple of years ago. The conversation around Terrell Hatton was nice player, pops up on the PGA Tour, wins a couple of DP World Tour events every now and then, but has not yet factored in a major championship. And in fact, he was missing several cuts in them. He has definitely changed around his game over these past couple years, popped up at the PGA Championship as well. You look at his record of late, consistent factor on LIV Golf, won a couple of starts ago as well. I like Terrell Hatton. If you want a deeper long shot, I was really surprised that Aaron Rye was not yet in the Open Championship until last week's finish at the Scottish Open, where they had the sort of Open qualifying series. This is a player who, if you go back to March, he's got 6 top 20 finishes, his last 3 starts in particular, top sevens, all of them. He is so precise from tee to green. And even though he does not have a ton of experience in the Open Championship, the last of his 2 wins on the DP World Tour came at the 2020 Scottish Open at Renaissance Club. So he clearly knows how to do it. The 29-year-old Englishman, I think you could do a lot better as a dark horse when it comes to Aaron Rye.
Didn't know we were doing multiple dark horses, and I'm not even quite sure this qualifies because I think you put him in a different category. But Colin Morikawa, coming off of what he did last week, he's won this, so we're not qualifying. This horse is where a dark horse. Probably not a dark horse, but I like him as a betting favorite this week. If you and I are going to wander by the betting house this week, whatever his number is, I'm going to put 5 pounds on each way simply because it's more like one of those locks back in the day when Tiger Woods showed up here and you knew he was going to finish in the top five. Or the top six. His iron play is back. It looks like he's much more comfortable like he was when he won the Open Championship with those irons. And he putted really well last week at the Scottish Open. I expect that to continue this week.
You know how with Rory and your biggest disappointment this week, you kind of erased and went back and forth doing that. That to me was Colin Morikawa and my pick to win this tournament. I ultimately went with Rory.
Both of us had to make painful choices, didn't we?
I know. So I went with Rory because of the reasons I just outlined a couple of minutes ago, but I desperately wanted to pick Colin Morikawa to win a major championship for the second major in a row. I also picked him to win at Pinehurst, and that did not quite pan out. But you look at him, he's been the most, I think, consistent golfer outside of Scottie Scheffler over these past couple of months. He's not finished worse than 16th since the Masters. He has put himself in big-time spots, whether it was at the Masters, whether it was at the PGA Championship. All he has done has been consistently contend, and he just hasn't quite gotten over the line yet. The 2021 Open champion, I think, is a really good bet. He's not a dark horse, and yet he's not one of the betting favorites. But to me, I think Colin Morikawa is very likely to factor in. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause, Rex, is the crosswinds. This golf course predominantly plays down and off the right for a right-hander on the outward nine, and then inward it plays into and from the left, which of course is something that gives me nightmares. That sort of accentuates a miss hit, and Colin Morikawa's miss is traditionally to the right when he comes up and out of his traditional fade shot. If that's how the entire more difficult back nine is going to play, that's the only thing that gave me a little bit of pause and was the reason why I ultimately switched to Rory. Who is your pick to win?
Pick to win is Scotty for the reasons I pointed out earlier in the podcast. And I know it's chalk, and I know a lot of people are going to roll their eyes at that. However, you are against Scotty, so I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this. Look, there are a myriad reasons of why you would pick him to win this championship, but it boils down to ball striking. And it's going to depend on how he plays off the tee. He doesn't strike me as the type of person that's going to wrestle with the idea that can I not play aggressive off the tee. I think he's pretty good about putting himself in positions. And again, I'll go back to the way Henrik Stenson played this course back in 2016. He almost made it look boring the way he just found a lot of fairways, found a lot of greens, and didn't put himself in a position where he's going to make a big mistake. So Scotty's my pick.
Not a bad call. He has won 60% of his last 10 starts. Yes, he's won 6 of his last 10. That is not an egregiously long limb to go out on, and I'm not really in the Scotty Scheffler doubting business, although I do not think, Rex, I do not think this is going to be his week for some of the reasons we talked about earlier. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. As a reminder, we'll be doing mini pods after each and every tournament round this week. You guys seem to love them, and we are happy to bring them to you. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. We have plenty of content up on the site. We look forward to talking to you guys on Thursday night after the first round of hopefully what is an epic opening round of this 152nd Open Championship.
Maddie's talking about Bobby Jones now.